podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Seahawks fans, wherever you may be, thanks for listening to the show. Join your hosts, Bill Alvstedt and Keith Myers, as we talk Seahawks football.
Hey, hi, Seahawks fans. Welcome back to another episode of the Seahawks Playbook Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Alvstedt, sitting down with co-host Keith Myers here to talk Seahawks football. We're inside of a week away now for the 2024 NFL Draft. Seahawks will be on the clock in about a week and an hour or so. Today's show, though, we're going to focus on some strategy stuff. We're going to talk about the different shelves and ledges in the draft. And what we mean by that is every draft, there's areas of the draft that drop off talent-wise, depending on position group, from one player, and then there's a ledge, and the next player is, you know, separated by maybe a round. Maybe it's a half a round if it's early in the draft. Maybe it's a round or two later on in the draft. And we talk about those because Seahawks have a limited number of picks. Where are they going to fall in those ledges, and kind of align that with the types of players that the team is going to be looking for, the different position groups where both of us feel like we still have a need to address, and we could add additional talent to the roster. And how does that align? Is it aligned currently? What do we need to do to get it aligned? Is there going to be trade backs? Will we trade up? I'm sure there'll be a little bit of both depending on where we're at in the draft. Mm-hmm. So welcome in, Keith. How you doing?
Doing good. Yeah, we got a lot to talk about here. I know I seem to say that almost every show, but this one's going to be full. So let's just jump right into it.
Yeah. So, you know, what I did is I kind of separated this out so it's easier to follow day one, day two, and day three. So those are the basic areas of the draft. And then within those days are a few different ledges. Day one, picks 1 through 15 are measured about the same. And then 16 through 32, roughly about the same. You can extend that into round two and three and so forth. But that's day two. Day two is going to be picks 33 through 74, 75 through 100. Day three, 101 to 150, 151 to 199. And 200 to 255 or wherever the last pick is there. And those are just general ideas, but Keith and I have done our homework this off season, and we've done multiple looks at mock drafts, and we've taken a look at the player profiles and the types of players in different areas of the draft. And these are roughly kind of where drafts or this draft in particular is segmented, if you will. And Keith can kind of explain that a little bit more as we get going. We've highlighted a number of position groups. Keith has to bring in a few players to talk about in those different areas of the draft. And how does Seattle come away from this draft with a few of those players?
Yeah, and so that's sort of that leads in perfectly, because what I did was I took the four position groups that I think the Seahawks have to get guys in, which would be defensive line, offensive line, linebacker, safety. I think just based on the way the roster is currently constructed, they need bodies at those positions, but they also need long-term solutions at those positions. There's a lot of band-aids trying to hold those position groups together, and they need some long-term answers. So I looked at those four, and then I looked at, as you know, those groupings of picks that Bill was talking about, and said, okay, who in that range, what are the guys that I think best fit Seattle and what they're looking to do? And so I've got a player or two from each position in each of those groups.
Now, I would imagine as we talk about the first day, picks 1 through 15, there's not a lot. But I will say this, if there's a player in that grouping that we think, you know, the Seahawks are going to have their own big board. They're going to have a list of players. If somebody were to fall into the pick 16 area and they were highly rated, and Seattle didn't want to leave the draft without that player, what type of player would they be looking for in that number 16 spot, Keith?
Well, I mean, for them, just because of where they're sitting, with a lack of picks behind it and a lack of draft capital, it better be a blue chip player for them. It's going to be a guy they, right. It's going to be someone that they know coming in is going to be, a Pro Bowler. And right away, instant starter, instant impact player, and Pro Bowler, you know, at least starting year two. Same way with Witherspoon last year, right? We're thinking pick number five, if they can't get a quarterback, if the quarterbacks all come off the board early, which they did, then they're going to trade down. But they didn't, because they looked at Witherspoon and said, he's a guy that's worth the cost. And they weren't wrong, at least not in year one. Like, he's right. been, he was fantastic last year. And so if they're going to pick at 16 and the opportunity cost, right, of not moving down and getting more picks, means the player better be a blue chip, guy. It can't be fringy at all. And it's hard to see one of those guys being, you know, absolutely there. And
I don't know that it's going to be absolutely there, but weird stuff happens, in drafts and so forth. I could see a guy like Roma, Dunze, you know, maybe be available in the 10 range, not at the 16 range, but in range enough for them to, if they wanted to go get somebody, they might.
Yeah. If you drop to 12 and then, and you could go up and get a guy.
For a third round pick, you might go get a guy.
Yeah. To go up and get, man, Seattle's wide receiver group would be insane.
It would be crazy, but you know, you're going to probably move on from Tyler Lockett either via trade or next year, possibly retirement. And mm-hmm. so that would kind of allow the team to move on without bringing in a rookie next year and just kind of transitioning really pretty smoothly. Another guy I thought about too, a guy that I mock over and over and over, just missing him, is a guy like Dallas Turner. By all accounts, the best edge player in this draft. And is he the dynamo? Is he the difference maker? I don't know where he's at on Seattle's board. He's probably on their board. I think they brought him in for a visit, right? Mm-hmm. And so if a guy like that's sitting around at like 12 or 13 and we need to move up in order to jump, frequently mocked is Indianapolis sitting right in front of us. If we need to jump them to get to him, it's a pretty easy do to, as far as draft capital, to move up, but it does leave us empty behind it. Mm-hmm. So if you move up a little bit, it's just one less pick probably that we're going to have to work with to move around in the draft later on.
I think in that situation, it comes down to, if Dallas Turner is there, is Jared Verse also there? Play the same position, both considered, you know, blue chip, edge rusher kind of guys. And if they're both still available, then it doesn't matter if Indy takes one of them, you can take the other and you're going to get your guy if that's what you want. Personally, I don't think the Seahawks go that route. I think there's a couple of wide receivers, you know, cause there's like three elite wide receivers in this draft, like truly elite ones. One of them might drop in that range, like a Dunze, might. I cannot believe it's going to be Marvin Harrison Jr. I doubt he gets out of the top five, unless the top five quarter players are all quarterbacks. But yeah, so it's going to be the quarterbacks and a couple of wide receivers. And I just don't see guys that I think are,
Fatanu, if he's like their clear number one, if they view him as a left tackle, Keith, and not moving into guard, if they just view him as a tackle, but he's the guy that they want on the team, they've interviewed him, they've talked to him, I'm sure. Would they even move up? Would they consider moving up for him? Considering that there are some mocks that look like he's going to go, you know, earlier than 16 and some that he goes later. I'm not sure where he falls, but
are you going to give up another draft pick and give up on a player you've already spent 2 years on and that's played well to go get? So you're giving up a fourth round pick or a third round pick and you're also giving up on Charles Cross, who was pretty dang good the second half.
Or you flip Charles for a pick.
Still, you're not getting a first round pick back for him. So it's a net loss. You're losing, in order to do that. To me, that's pointless. You're not moving up. Now, if Fontenot drops, and let's say that he's there at 16, the CX moved down to 19, he's still sitting there, and they go, you know what? It's just too much value. We have to do it. Okay, fine. But you didn't give up something to move up to create a log jam at a position where now you can't get all your talent on the field anymore.
That makes a lot of sense. All right. So let's talk about pick 16 or moving back a little bit into that range. Now, how do you value players in the draft in the first round after pick 16?
So I'm looking you in there. You talk to, or you hear John Snyder talk, and every year he talks about, there's 32 picks in the first round, but they usually only have like 24, 26 guys that they have first round grades on. And then people start taking players that talent wise are second round picks, for the last six or seven picks in the first round, because that's what's left on the board. And so you have to look at where that shelf is each year. And every year it's a little different. I think this year it's sitting about 21 or 22. If you're going to move down, you don't move down below that spot because you want to get a first round pick.
Maybe you're expecting somebody to fall potentially.
Yeah, but
they did that last year. They said that they had a first round grade on our second round pick.
Yeah, because he fell and they were surprised that he was there. He was the last first round pick grade still on their board. And again, last year they said they had 23. And so they got Witherspoon and Smith-Njigba in the first round. And then, when that third pick in the second round came around, they still had a guy with one of their first round grades on the board. So they grabbed him.
Right.
Very cool. Yeah. And so in this case, like I said, I look in and you got to figure out where that is. You want to be above that spot. So you're looking at guys that are getting, that are worth it for a first round pick. You don't want to be below it, or you want to be well below it because you move down enough times. Because if you view pick 27 and pick 40 as being roughly the same value, why would you take a guy at 27 and not move down a couple of times and get more picks or just more assets and then, still get a guy of the same quality? So I think you kind of have to look at that.
I agree. The other option is you're at pick 21 and you've still got three or four guys on your board with first round values, or a guy that's just out of the first round now into the second, but you're going to gain a pick by dropping back even more. Say you drop back with Green Bay at pick 20-25. You're going to gain a third round pick out of that deal potentially. Does that difference factor in?
Yeah, I mean, it has to. And that's one of the things you look at is that if you've got, so draft picks are not a sure thing, no matter how well you've scouted, no matter how sure thing they seem to be, they never are. And the miss rate on picks is pretty high. It's highest, in round one, unless you're taking a quarterback at the top of the draft. And it's, lowest in round seven, because most round seven picks, if they make it, that year, it's on a practice squad. And then most of them never end up doing much in the NFL. I mean, some do, but look, that's out of all of them around the league. There's the miss rate's really low. So, by moving down, you're increasing your probability of having your pick be a miss. But by gaining another pick, now you've got another spot where there's a probability that you could get a hit. And your net, the net probability that one of the two guys that you pick, actually ends up making it in the NFL and being good is higher by moving down, because right. the combined probability of both of them is higher than the individual probability of the higher drafted player had you not moved down. And I don't know if any of that made sense whatsoever.
Well, that's really wonkish. And I, you know, I get it. And I think most people get that in general terms. What does it mean in this draft with this talent pool where, if we do drop back, let's just say we drop back with Pittsburgh at 20 and we pick up a late third round pick. Let's say we drop back again to 25 with Green Bay and pick up another third round pick. We've got now three picks in day two as opposed to one, and we're still getting potentially a nice player. Let's say it's Graham Barton, for example, in the first round. We're still getting a player that's going to come in and start and really kind of impact the roster right away in a positive way, and you know, potentially a Pro Bowl type level guard in this.
So you're looking at by doing that, you're looking at instead of getting Troy Fontenot, you're getting Graham Barton or Powers Johnson.
Yes, and
still
and
still good prospects, but not picks. Not the high end like you know. Blue chip guy that Fontenot is. Or maybe if you go defensive tackle, instead of getting Byron Murphy, you are taking Zerhan Newton, right? Mm-hmm. Who's a little less dynamic and a little less, you know, just athletically freaky, but, you know, still a good player, but not quite the same. Right. Or instead of getting, you know, Cooper DeJean to be your cornerback / safety, you're looking at, you know, Bullard in that. So yes, you are moving down and yes, you know, you can still get a guy, but you have to recognize that if you drop down below that threshold part that we, that shelf that we were just talking about, you're dropping into a lower tier player.
Yes. Okay. So, and most of that back end around one is kind of equal value. So pick 16 to about 25-ish, and then mm-hmm. from 25 until about 40-ish. Now, I kind of said my draft ledge was 16 to 32 and 33 to 74. That's true-ish, but there are still, you know, there's a little bit of a drop-off after 40 to maybe 70, you know. Where you're going to get similarly valued players. So what are the Seahawks trying to do if they drop back and accumulate draft capital? It gives them some options to maybe even move back up into the second round.
Yeah. So this is a weird spot because the Seahawks don't have a pick. You either have to move all the way up from the 80s where they have a pick or drop all the way down from 16 in order to end up in this range. And it's kind of weird to think about doing either of those. But there is reason to do it. The guys I mentioned already with Newton, Barton and Powers Johnson might be worth it because they're in that spot, that range. A guy like Trevondae Sweat, which is the best pure nose tackle in this draft, one of the only pure nose tackles in this draft, is going to go in that range. Linebacker Junior Colston, safety Jaden Hicks, offensive line Cooper Beebe. These are all in the 40 to 75 range. That the Seahawks don't have a pick in that range. Now, if one of these guys drops and is there at 75 or 72, maybe it's easier to move up from 83 to 72 than it is to move from 80 or 83 to 52, where you'd expect one of these guys to go. So if somebody drops, moving up a little bit.
It's easier, but it's not impossible.
Yeah.
So, you know, for example, let's just say a guy like Ladd McConkey, wide receiver, or Darius Robinson, the edge from Missouri, or Troy Franklin, somebody, you know, Keon Coleman, there's a whole bunch of players. Edgerrin Cooper's a good example. Edgerrin Cooper's got a, you know, a big board area in the draft between 40 and 55, depending on which big board you're looking at. Let's just say the Seahawks really want him. They need to get in this area of the draft. you could take those two picks that they acquired, the late 80s or early 90s draft picks, by moving back in the draft to move up, you send both those picks back out and get into the 55 range where mm-hmm. he might be available. Or you can always use future draft capital. So you can use a third round pick is, you know, 90, whatever you acquired, plus a 2025 third round pick to move into the back into the second round. So there's different things that are possible. You don't want to do that if you can avoid it, because obviously you're in the same boat next year and you want to be able to accumulate draft capital in future years as well. So if you can move around by using this year's draft capital, either moving back in the first round a couple different times, acquiring a pick, and then maybe moving around, that would be the best way to do it, I think, this year. And I expect that, actually. I've looked at this thing countless times, over and over and over, every day for the last week, to be completely honest. And we're getting ready to do a mock draft show this weekend, our final. And the more you look at it, the more you try to figure out a way to come out of this draft with a few, you know, impact players in different levels of the draft, it almost requires the Seahawks to drop back in the first round a little bit if they want to play around with day two picks. They just don't have any other way.
Because they have the one at 83 and that's it. Now they might be able to move, they have the one, 102 and move that up and get a pick in the 90s. And therefore to get a second day two pick, but we're still talking about two guys at the end of round three. We're not talking about, you know, anybody in round two. That's a lot of talent that you're passing by because you don't have a pick there. But if you're going to have the capital to move up into the 50s to get, let's say you want Junior Colston to be a linebacker that you stick in there the way Jordan Brooks has been for the last 4 years, and you just let him do his thing in the middle of your defense. You know, if you're going to move up to do that, you have to move down in picks with the first pick to gain a pick or two that you can use as an asset to trade back to another team to move back up, so that way you can get a second player in that range. So yeah, you'd have to move back, like you said, 25. And so if you end up picking at 25 and 52 overall, because you move down and then move back up in the second round, like that's what you're going to have to do. Do that and then hold on to your picks.
I'll be honest with you too. If you look at some of the clues that the team has been leaving, and the type of players that they're looking at, they've had meetings at the combine, they've had meetings at the VMAC, that the 30 visits everyone talks about. Most of those players are day two picks, mm-hmm. And second and third round guys. And we're talking about like Malachi Corley, the wide receiver. It's kind of, he's got some unique skill sets. Reminds me of Debo Samuel a little bit. Fun player. Tight ends, if you're going to do Cade Stover or Theo Johnson, those guys look like they're going to go in the second and potentially early third round. Ben Sinnott, he might be there at 81, but he's not going to be there much longer than that. Point to different offensive linemen. You mentioned Cooper Beebe. We've talked about Graham Barton. What about Christian Mahogany, mm-hmm. kid from Boston College, kind of a real gritty type of player. He's going to be there in the third. Maybe gone by the time Seattle picks at 81. Maybe they need to go up and get him if they haven't already.
He's right in that range in the 80s. Christian Mahogany, maybe Cedric Van Pran, the center. Both of those guys are going to be in that range. So if you move, right, if you were looking at one of those guys, you got to still be in that spot. You can't give up on that 81 pick to move up and then not have a spot in the middle at 81 if you want one of those guys. And right. So
this could be a draft where you end up, you start with seven picks. You could end up walking away out of this draft with four picks. You don't really want to do that. It'd be ideal for me if you could walk away out of this draft with nine picks. Well, there's only one way to do that. That's move off down. The first round pick, move down, mm-hmm. pick up two or three picks, move again. Maybe a small drop back from 81 to 88 and pick up an additional fifth round pick. There's going to be some movement. They don't have a fifth round pick this year. That's why I said that. So they want to be at the different levels we're talking about. And to me, there's just no other way to do it unless you leverage future draft picks, and they do not want to do that if they don't have to.
Yeah. And I look at all of this and I'm like, we're talking about all these shells. There's a really big drop off at the end of round five, about pick 170. And after that, the talent level drops way off.
You're getting projects.
Yeah.
These guys are priority free agents in many years.
In most drafts, and they're going to be early sixth round picks in this draft.
And you might hit on one.
True. You might, but I'm just saying, but your overall grade, your overall score on these guys is going to be lower than you typically find in that range of the draft. And so with that in mind, maybe you don't want to come out of this draft with 9 players. Maybe you want to come out of this, this draft with 5 or 6 and then have extra picks in the future because, you know, get your guys at the top of the draft, the first 5 rounds. And then after that, it doesn't matter that much. So if you've given away those 6th round picks and the 7th round pick as part of trading up in a spot, you just don't worry about it because
I agree. It's we've got 2 6 and the 7th. Maybe you package 2 6 and that 7th to move up in the 4th and you get your Ben Sinnott, you know, instead of having to choose AJ Barner later on in the draft. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a guy like Trotter, the linebacker. And then later on in the draft, you're trying to select from Marist Luafu from Notre Dame, and you know, or Jalex Hunt, the edge rusher from Houston Baptist, who is projected to go in that range. It's like you're right. There's a big shelf there. And what are the Seahawks looking to do? Are they looking to fill out their roster with bodies, or are they looking to have some impact players this year that are going to affect the roster? It's a big philosophy.
If you're looking to fill out your roster with bodies, you do what you did last year, and that signed the largest undrafted rookie free agent class ever.
Yeah, right. But then again, you didn't have really anybody hold on to on the roster. You did, or exactly. Certainly not on the 53. They stuck around the practice squad, but that's mm-hmm. what you're looking at.
None of those
guys. I'd rather have the impact guy. That's the argument for sticking at 16, Keith, in a sense, in that at 16, you're not guaranteed success, but in this draft, I think that you're pretty close. You know, you're going to get a good player, a blue chip player, as you said. You're going to get a Pro Bowl or maybe an All Pro at his position.
I think at 16 you can, because I think 5 quarterbacks are going to go in front of that. So that means,
and a few tackles.
Yeah, and at least 3 tackles,
and at least
3 wide receivers. Right. So now you're looking at. Just right there, we've already talked about 11 guys.
Right. And so that
are going to go.
That tells me that maybe Brock Bowers drops. You know, what do you do if Brock Bowers is sitting there? I take Brock Bowers because
Brock Bowers is a tight end for those of you listening.
We haven't talked a lot about Brock Bowers in our shows, Keith, but this guy's a kind of a transcendent talent. If we're being completely honest, you know, and our tight end room is pretty light. Yeah, we want to prioritize the interior of the defense and offensive lines and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, Brock Bowers is a difference maker.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, he really is. I mean, and he's not just a receiving tight end either, like a big wide receiver, like a Jimmy Graham. He's a guy that does everything well, can also block extremely well.
Right. Byron Murphy. We've talked a lot about Byron Murphy being, one of the first defensive tackles off the board. You know, he's not a traditional zero tech nose tackle, but he's going to be your 3 tech guy for years to come and really disrupt it. Now he's going to have to share time with Leonard Williams. He's going to have to share time with a couple other guys on the roster like Dre Jones, but they've got enough move around ability between all those guys that I think that, you know, he'd still play 40 to 50% of the snaps in year one, if not more.
Yeah.
And you might stick and pick with a guy like Byron Murphy. I don't know how high he would be on Seattle's board, but he's going to be pretty high.
Mm-hmm. The thing about Murphy and that is one of the things that I looked at when I was trying to do this, like different guys in different regions, is the lack of defensive tackle talent overall in this draft.
It's not good.
It's not a great year for it. You know, so I'm looking, I was looking, you know, down in the 75 to 100 range, and I'm like, the best I could come up with was Mason Smith. You get down.
Michael Hall might be a guy.
Okay. But then, you know, in the 96 to 125, like my person I put down was Leonard Taylor. Like these aren't guys I'm excited about. Now, Christian Boyd, if you get down at, in around 5 and 6, like that, I could get behind, given the, you know,
or
the
lack McKinley of Jackson with one of their fourth round picks.
Yeah. That's actually McKinley Jackson's one of those that's on my list too. And then the only other one, is Miles Murphy, who's more of an edge than a defensive tackle. I just had a hard time really getting a lot of guys at that position. So maybe you look at that and you go, this is not a good defensive tackle draft, and we can get the best one. The one of the very few we know is going to be an absolutely impact player. Maybe we just do it.
Yeah.
And you can never have
They're also very, very familiar with Chris Jenkins, the defensive lineman out of Michigan. Mm-hmm. And that might be a name to watch. Michael Hall has got one of the best pass rush win rates from the defensive tackle spot in this draft. Believe it or not, he's just kind of under the radar because I think he has a problem being a three down lineman.
He's a guy that's going to be a specialist. He's going to be a sub package guy, the guy that comes in only in the nickel, and that kind of stuff. So, I think
it's interesting. You're right, though. I mean, the defensive tackle spot, defensive end, same sort of thing. If you're looking for traditional, if you're a 4-3 defense, you know, this is an awful draft, I think, for those teams.
Yeah, but if you're looking at a 3-4 defense, where you're looking at outside linebacker edge players in the Boye Mafi Uchenna Nwosu mold, it's actually good. Yeah. I think this is a good class.
I do like this class. In fact, if Seattle drops back and we're in the 22 to 24 range, a name to watch out that they might be enamored with is Chop Robinson.
Yeah. Penn State.
Yeah, we haven't talked a lot about him, but he's a player that I would, if Chop Robinson's on the board and Graham Barton is on the board and Byron Murphy's on the board, you know, and there's a few others on the board.
Powers Johnson, maybe Peyton Wilson.
Right. And who do you choose?
I move back again and let get another pick and let some of those guys come off the board and, you know, pick one. Cause I'd be happy with any of them. Right. Mm-hmm. Murphy is definitely worth that pick, but so is, you know, Graham Barton and Powers Johnson. And
right. But it does dictate the way the rest of the draft goes for you. So if you pitch an interior offensive lineman first, you don't have to really worry about that later on. If you pick a defensive guy first, you're looking for that.
You still
potentially
need
that interior lineman.
Yeah. You're still looking for that interior lineman. But yeah, so you get Murphy and you kind of just forget about that. And then you just kind of focus in on a guy like Christian Mahogany or Cooper Beebe or Cedric Van Praan to be your target in the middle of rounds. Maybe a Dominique Pooney or a Zach Center if you want to go later. But I think the offensive line needs to be a higher priority than waiting until, you know, early parts of day three or even the middle parts of day three to try and find that player. I think that you've got to – I would – if I'm looking at all of this and I'd say, okay, all those players you mentioned are available, I'm probably taking Graham Barton out of that and then trying to find a defensive lineman like a Mason Smith or Trevondre Sweat later as my defensive line, you know, addition in this year's draft, because the offensive line part is just more important to me right now. And it's, okay,
yeah.
I'm the offensive line person, so to me, I overvalue that compared to everyone else. But to me, it's the biggest priority. It's the biggest need. It's the biggest team weakness.
It wouldn't surprise me if we double up on interior offensive line, not necessarily at center. I think that Oluwatimi is going to be our center, but I would not be surprised if the team is looking potentially at upgrading Anthony Bradford at right tackle. I know he started 10 games last year, but he plays in a certain style. And for example, if they drafted Graham Barton, and then later on Cooper Beebe was falling, and he got into the 75 range. He was expected to go around 60. Beebe's sitting there at 75. Seattle moves up from 81 to 75. I could see them selecting him because he'd be the best player on the board. Mm-hmm. And upgrade that spot and just let the cards fall where they may. Now, to me, that's a potential thing that might happen out of this draft. We would double up on a position that we look pretty good at. And interior offensive line, to me, is...
See, I'd rather wait and get Christian Mahogany later. Yeah, I think he's got a higher...
He's not going to be... Yeah, he's not going to be much later.
He's got a higher upside. Though. And I also think that, you do that... you just took Graham Barton to be your left guard forever. Mm-hmm. And you've got Bradford, who started 10 games and looked pretty good mm-hmm. during most of it. Maybe not right at the beginning, but for most of it, he looked pretty good. On the other side, I want a guy that I think can develop into maybe being a center. Maybe this is someone that we can start Oluwatimi while we train another guy to be more versatile. I want a guy that I can do that. I don't think Cooper Beebe's that guy.
Yeah, he's pretty much a left guard too. Mm-hmm. Played left guard every snap in college.
Yep.
Yeah, interesting. What do you think the team does later on in the draft as far as defensive backs? Are they looking at safety, or are they looking at corner, or are they going to ignore that position altogether?
I think they're looking at safety because... you just jettisoned your top two safeties, at least by contract. You brought some guys in, but they're not move the needle guys. They're not guys that's going to really dictate to other teams what they can and can't do offensively. Good players, but not special players. So I think, even later in the draft, if you're looking at guys like Malik Mustafa at safety in the fifth or sixth round, mm-hmm. just guys got speed for days and all sorts of athleticism. And yeah, he can play special teams for the first year while he learns, and you can develop him into a guy that can be a starter. Now, he could also not develop at all and be another Tedrick Thompson. But the hope would be that since you're taking a late round pick, you're taking a shot on a guy that has the talent to become an elite player. Hopefully they have, what it takes to take all that potential and do something with it. And if they don't, you're at a fifth or sixth round pick. So
one of the other names to watch is Dadrian Taylor Demerson in the fourth round. And then Dominique Hampton, the safety from Washington, is a pretty good scheme fit for this team. A lot of diversity there. Could be available in the fifth, potentially sixth round. He might end up going earlier, depending on how teams value his skill set. Name to watch somewhere in the fourth to fifth round, I think.
Another pick in that range, I would say, would be Christian Oladipo out of Oregon State, I think. Mm-hmm. For a lot of the same reasons, versatile, can play up in the box, can play in the deep third, can do a lot of different things. And I think versatility in this defense is going to be key.
I think, speaking of versatility on the cornerback room, we may end up drafting a corner. You can never have too many, I don't think. Renardo Green is an underrated prospect, I think, that's looking in the third to fourth round range. Offers a lot of scheme versatility. Jerrion Jones has played a lot of safety in college, being looked at as a corner, but can do both. I think they would like that. Same with Jalen Simpson, guy that might be available in the back end of the fifth round. We currently don't have any picks, but if he's falling into that sixth round area, that might be a name to watch as well. it's going to be interesting, this draft, Keith. So talk to me about your mocks that you're preparing for this weekend show. Strategy wise, it's hard and it can be done. It's hard to stick at 16, or there's a couple of drafts I did where I moved up from 16 to 14. I just jumped Indianapolis and picked Turner and felt I did really well. But also then I didn't have a pick until 102 because I sent my 81 away to move up that couple of spots. And then I have the long wait between what was it, 14. I got my Dallas Turner.
And round now I don't, four. Now you I don't pick another again. Player until round four.
Right. So that's painful to do. And of course it's no fun to talk about mock drafts when you've got that big of a gap. So my strategy was to drop back incrementally and pick up some picks and then move around a little bit.
Agreed.
I have a fun mock. In fact, I've got about three mocks I'm looking at and I can't,
I do not have one bring. Picked out. I'm probably going to run a couple more tonight just to, look for trends and how things are changing versus one that we did the last one a couple weeks ago. And see if I can get some new names for us to talk about. So we're not talking about the same ones.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm trying to do the same a little bit more or less.
Cool.
So awesome. Good show. It's complicated. It's kind of wonky. We get it, but we felt like this was a show that we hadn't done before and needed to kind of talk about the different levels of the draft and the strategy that kind of goes into that and what the Seahawks might do. So, I'll see you this weekend, Keith. We'll do the show. We'll probably end up releasing it on Monday, something like that. And then we'll do a preview show for the NFL draft coming starting on Thursday night next week. First round should be awesome. Exciting. Should be exciting. All right. Find Keith on Twitter at @MyersNFL. You can find me NW Seahawk. The show is Seahawks Playbook Podcast. Find us on your favorite podcast platform and our YouTube channel and hit that subscribe button. So till next time. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
Seahawks Playbook Podcast listeners, thanks for joining us for another edition of the show. You can find us on Twitter. Bill is at NW Seahawk. Keith is at @MyersNFL. And the show is at Hawks Playbook. You can listen and subscribe to the show at SeahawksPlaybook.com.
Podcast Network.